Welcome to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Are you ready to get real and start living each day in purity? This dynamic program is designed to educate, encourage, and equip listeners with the tools necessary for living a life of sexual purity. Pure Sex Radio brings you the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real-life struggles, learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction, and get serious about purity. Your hosts for Pure Sex Radio are Jonathan Doherty and Steven Cervantes. Jonathan is the director of Be Broken Ministries and founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop for Men. Steven is the founder of the Hope Counseling Center. Visit us online at puresexradio.com. And now, please welcome Jonathan and Steven on Pure Sex Radio.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. Thank you for being here with us. My name is Jonathan. I'm here with my friend Steven. Steven, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you, sir.
Do you ever get bored of the same intro?
No, I keep thinking maybe I should say something snappier, like great, or Dave Ramsey has his, you know.
Better than I deserve.
Better than I deserve. More blessed than I deserve. You know, why don't I sound real spiritual? You know?
Well, this is real radio about real life, and
so we
need to be real.
Okay.
And that's just it, folks. This the Pure Sex Radio broadcast is about training men and educating women on biblical sexuality, and it's neat. This week we're going to be talking about an article that was written in the American Family Association Journal, October of 2010, and so just recently. And the title of the article is Bonded in the Brain, New Science Confirms Biblical View of Sex, to which after I read that title, I just went, duh, you know. It's like how much there's never going to be a time in which, you know, true scientific findings ever refute whatever the Bible has to say, because the Bible is God's word and it's true. But it's fascinating nonetheless to see how some of the scientific evidence is starting to line up with what the Bible has already said for a long time about sexuality. And so much of this article came out of research on a book entitled Hooked: New Science on How Casual Sex is Affecting Our Children, which was written by Joe McElhaney Jr. and Frieda McKissick Bush. And so again, the title of the book is Hooked. And so there's this growing pool or school of evidence here that's starting to say there are significant links between what is happening in sexual relationships and how it ties in with brain activity, and they're starting to discover why there's certain patterns that go on sexually in individuals and how that fits in with what's going on in the brain and how all of that fits in with what the Bible has said all along in terms of the power of sexuality and why God has established such strong boundaries concerning the context in which he wanted sexuality to be expressed. So, Stephen, why don't you dive in here and tell us kind of what your first impressions were of this article?
I think it's a great article. And I was going to ask you this question because it starts, many parents must feel desperate when it comes to trying to protect their children from a hypersexualized culture. You have little kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are you doing to begin with, realizing we're living in this hypersexualized culture?
Well, one of the things that we've tried, even from very early on, is sex and sexuality is an open topic in our home. Even with little children, you can age-appropriate talk to them about their sexuality. And in our house, we've always celebrated the fact that we are all purposely made sexual. We are not embarrassed of the fact that we have genitals. We're not embarrassed of the conversation. We're not embarrassed of the fact that we were made this way. So that's one key element in terms of just trying to develop a framework in our home for the topic. Because, you know, obviously there are certain things we don't talk to our children about yet concerning certain aspects of sexuality. But we're building a framework that says this is not only a safe environment to talk about this, but this is an encouraged topic to bring up. So that's one thing. As our kids are getting into, you know, sort of the later, mid to later elementary years, we're talking to them now more about how they are going to protect the gift of their sexuality in terms of what they are, what they allow to be talked about, what conversations they're going to allow themselves to be a part of at school. You know, we've, again, as part of that framework that we've tried to design in our home concerning the topic, one of the things that we've tried to really instill in our kids is that sexuality is a gift. It's a very, very precious, treasured, valuable gift, and it's theirs. And right now, it's theirs only. And we've made it very clear to our children, it's only to eventually be shared with your husband or wife. And so, and what's amazing to me, Stephen, is, you know, so many parents are so afraid to talk to their little kids at all about you know, penises and vaginas and just anything about sexuality. And, but there's no shame in my children concerning the topic. We're the ones that as adults, we develop this high level of shame concerning the topic of sexuality when there's such innocence and beauty and just there's no shame in my children. So parents, if you've got little kids, be brave. It's okay. Work on your own shame issues concerning the topic. Go through some of your own healing concerning that so that you can create an environment in which your children are not going to be afraid of the topic. And finally, one of the things we've tried to do in that framework is any questions that they might have concerning anything, a feeling that they've had, a conversation that they've had that has to do with anything about their sexuality, we invite them that we would be the first that they would think to talk to. We really try to lay that foundation so that when the heavier topics come up, they don't bail to their friends or they don't try to find information in a magazine or in the internet or what. It's like, come to mom and dad. This is exactly the topic we want you to talk to us about.
So you're pretty proactive about going after this and trying to have discussions and monitor material and what comes in the home and those kind of things.
Absolutely.
Well, this article says that that material stimulates the brain and creates pathways. And he says the brain is a magnificent and wonderful organ. It's complex. It sends electrical impulses that flow through your cells. And there are neurons that end in synapses and that use neurochemicals to send the signals between these synapses. And they create a pathway. And it's interesting, I was watching a program on seniors. They were talking, if you repetitively do something, it deepens like a rut, they said, these neural pathways. It just entrenches them over and over again. And so the more you practice something, the more habitual it becomes. It becomes chemically reinforced in your brain. And so you don't have to think about it. And all the signal, the chemicals, all the natural process just reinforces that behavior, which could be good. Or it could be bad.
Right. And that's one of the things they said in here. It says the brain can actually be changed and molded almost like a muscle. And so, I mean, that's a great new mindset, I think, to have concerning even your sexuality. The first one is to think that actually your sexuality has much more to do with what's going on in your brain chemically than anything that's going on in sort of any genital region or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Your greatest sexual organ is your brain, because that's where all the pleasure chemicals are being released. So thinking of that first, but then also thinking that whatever patterns you develop in your brain, whether good or bad, you're essentially strengthening whatever those patterns are.
That's what you're saying. Like muscles, it can be worked.
Yeah.
And you can build muscle or you can go flabby.
That's the good and the bad news, because the bad side of that is, hey, guess what? If you're practicing a lot of lusting, a lot of sinning sexually.
And fantasizing.
Then you are essentially strengthening that pathway in your brain.
That's right.
The good news is, though, that they also say that if you decrease particular activities, then that will weaken those particular connections. So then if as you're doing
you grow
healthy
others,
things,
like,
yeah.
Yes, as you grow in your spirit and self-discipline and growing in love and those kinds of things. So I'm flashing back and forth between this special I saw in the brain and this article, because they said it's like laying down these entrenched pathways, and then at one point you want to grow your brain, expand your brain, you have to lay down new pathways, you have to learn new skills, like taking dance if you don't dance, or a music lesson if you're not musically inclined, or learning a foreign language. Create a new pathway, grow new brain. You literally grow a new pathway, new brain connections. And they were talking about it in terms of Alzheimer's. How do you keep expanding
right.
your brain, laying down new thoughts and pathways so that you can grow brain cells and neurons and synapses? But this article, it talked, so it makes 2 points. One, you're laying down pathways. We better practice good pathways.
Right.
And then two, it talks about the chemicals that are used in between these synapses, these nerve endings, if you will. So it says that sex is one of the behaviors that is subject to patterns. And we kind of all know that, right?
Yeah.
You kind of like what you like, and you don't like that, but you do like that, and oh, that's good, then do this next, and do that next. And so it becomes a pathway, a habit. And what they're saying is that when you strengthen these habits, we want them to be good, because if you're sexually active and developing bad habits, you just move from one relationship, you quickly move to the next relationship, and you pick up and continue to grow that pattern. And you've often said this in your seminars. If you ever go back, you're going to the last place you left off. You're not going back to the beginning. And so the parallel is, if you start playing sexually and engaging with others, the next person you meet's going to be exposed to your last sexual behaviors, because you're just moving yourself down the sexual path of sexuality.
And as I started talking about these chemicals released in the brain, which they highlighted three here, dopamine, oxytocin, and vasopressin are the main chemicals, and we'll talk a little bit more about those. But one of the things they said is that there's also a particularly important time frame in a person's life in which some of these patterns can get entrenched more deeply and almost semi-permanently, and that is in younger people. So like in your pre-adolescence and your teenage years, because of all the hormonal changes that are going on, and then so there's naturally some more intense firing off of chemicals as the body changes, that if a young person starts really highlighting these dopamine dumps in their brain, because they keep going to either sexual activities or pornography or some sort of lustful activity in that way, then it creates almost this entrenched compulsivity to their sexual acting out. And again, we see this carried out in just our experience with teenagers. There's this growing, population of teens that are just compulsively involved and engaged in sexual behaviors, even without realizing the degree to which they're going back to these things. And part of what they're saying is this has a chemical element to it as well.
Right. They talk about the dopamine, the chemical dopamine, or the neurochemical, or they call them neurotransmitter. This dopamine chemical that works between is the reward signal of pleasure. And it's interesting how he talks about it. He said when you first meet someone, dopamine is what gives you that feeling of excitement. It's a pleasure chemical. It makes you feel good. So when you get around someone and you feel giddy, and you just have a fun feeling, a novel, new feeling, that's probably your dopamine system dumping pleasure chemicals. The thrill, I mean, we just say it with words, but there's a chemical basis to what's going on when you meet someone and you get excited. Sex is one of the strongest generators of this dopamine reward system. And so there is a cycle to it being released. It happens, they call it this reward signal, during pleasurable times like touch, or novelty, new, exciting, thrilling relationships. And the dilemma is that you can get hooked on firing your own dopamine chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that interesting?
That's why they say, you know, this sex or you know, expressing your sexuality in various number of ways has an addictive effect on the brain. Now, if you say that as a standalone statement, it might appear negative, right? That sex has an addictive effect on the brain. But what if?
Oh, it can have, right? I mean, just because you have one sexual.
But no,
thrill.
What I'm going to say is, according to what they're saying here with these chemicals, sex has the potential of having an addictive effect on the brain.
That's right.
Some would say that, well, man, that's negative. But what if you looked at it in the context of how God created sex? What if God created sex and said, hey, it's to be fully expressed within this one man, one woman covenant relationship? How does that statement change then? Sex has an addictive effect on the brain. What if you put it in that context of one man?
But you know what's interesting to me, and I've always thought this, you know, a 14, 15-year-old kid has the ability to dump his own pleasure chemicals, right? 14, 15, 16, 17. You can fire your own pleasure chemicals anytime you want. It's like, wow, what do you think they're going to do? You know, go, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to wait. And so that in fantasy and arousal, masturbation, guys are just dumping their pleasure chemicals.
But see, that's exactly why this article and this science is confirming a biblical view of sex.
Why it's needed, a framework, you mean.
Because it's saying, God said, I designed you to have that pleasure, even addictive release in your brain with sexual activity. Because I designed it for marriage in order that you might bond more intimately, more closely to that one individual in marriage. And so, again, a biblical view of sex from God's perspective says, yeah, I made it that way. Because I want to be the most powerful glue that holds two people together. And so within marriage, this article in terms of the chemicals and all that is confirming, yeah, God obviously made it to be one flesh in a marriage relationship. And that's where he gets into the oxytocin and the vasopressin in terms of sort of the female and the male counterpart in terms of these brain chemicals. Oxytocin being the female chemical that's released that helps a woman bond and feel intimate and close in terms of how her sexuality responds to touch and talk and intimacy. And then vasopressin is sort of the male counterpart to oxytocin that helps him emotionally and physically bond to his wife, and it even says also helps him bond emotionally to his children, to have that sort of feelings toward his children of just closeness and that they're his and the pride that comes with that. And so there's these chemical sort of counterparts to each other there.
He talks about women in this article. He says when young people, women, have their first sexual experience before age 16, they usually wind up having more sexual partners than if they'd waited until they were older than 20. Sexual behavior for this young group, once it's commenced, appears almost compulsive. And then it says down below, the sex has an addictive effect on the brain. This very pleasurable experience of being touched and aroused, and there's a, it's not just a physical, there's also a chemical component to it. And then he does go down and talk about oxytocin. They talk about that one as the kind of the cuddle, if you will, chemical. It causes bonding. And he talks about women again, physical touch, and that whole idea of just cuddling, holding, comforting, bonding. And they talk about a mother and a child, childbirth, breastfeeding, lots of oxytocin going through the system when two people meet. There's a warm, meaningful, maybe intimate, hand-holding kind of oxytocin kind of experience. And so he's breaking this down into three of these chemicals and trying to explain that there is a chemical aspect to our sexuality that we have to understand also.
And this is why, you know, he goes on to say, this is why, you know, breaking up is hard to do. You know, that's because, again, we've gotten so far removed from God's perspective on sexuality that we try to figure everything out based on our experience. And what this science is saying is that, wow, lo and behold, God had it right from the very beginning, because God made sex. He made sex for one man and one woman in a marriage relationship. Folks, I can't overemphasize this. God did not make sex for anything outside of that relationship. There's nowhere that God made our sexuality to be expressed outside that relationship. If you understand that, then seeing how these chemicals release and what their purpose is in their releasing in your brain, wow, it makes perfect sense for bonding two intimate individuals in the closest possible way that two human beings can come together. Therefore, when you go through, if you go through dating cycles, if you just have what they call quote-unquote casual sex, if you're expressing your sexuality anywhere outside of that context in which God made, guess what? Breaking up is hard to do. Any sort of disconnect in which you've engaged your sexuality with another human being and then try to move away, it's very, very difficult, in part because these chemical releases have occurred. They've built these tracks. They've built these particular ruts in your brain. And if you've had multiple sexual experiences, then it becomes more and more difficult to actually bond to one individual, because you've, in essence, bonded to all these other people. That's why, folks, recovery from sexual addiction is one of the most difficult journeys in life, because there is more going on here than just some casual little, hey, I'm just going to go experiment, have a little fun, no strings attached, no big deal. It's much more powerful than that.
So I'm going to go back to the article, and it says, during sex, a woman's brain is literally flooded with oxytocin, that causing her desire and enjoying the contact. And a male brain is flooded with oxytocin and vasopressin, which is bonding. And it said bonding to your mate and bonding to your children. That's what those two chemicals help stir and create. And so he says God provided these neurochemicals to help married couples form strong bonds and to cement their relationship and to grow their marriages deeper, like an adhesive, a glue bonding one and one into one.
Right, exactly.
If that makes sense.
And again, all of this in this article just continues to confirm the biblical view of sex. Now, when he starts talking about it making it difficult to break up, you know, one of the reasons it's difficult to break up is because these neurochemicals, they're what you might call values neutral. They're just responding to whatever stimulus they're being given. It's not like oxytocin or vasopressin or dopamine have any quote-unquote morality attached to them. They're chemicals in your body. And so however we choose to use them, they're going to fire off in those ways, whether it be within the wonderful bounds and context in which God created in a marriage. Wow, how wonderful. They're going to fire off in the same way there as they will fire off if you're having an affair or if you're looking at porn. So does that make sense? They're values neutral. They're simply firing off to the stimulus that they're given.
Well, and he also said why breakups may be painful is because you're withdrawing from that touch and that comfort and that relationship. So people say their heart is broken, but they may be going through a chemical withdrawal where they don't feel
right.
those pleasure chemicals happening. And that's part of the dilemma of getting involved and breaking up and getting involved and breaking up again.
Yeah, and so and also he's talking about there's a danger here. There's like a degrading of your ability to bond the more that you fire off these chemicals in one relationship and then break those bonds and then try to go and then go bond again sexually with somebody else and then break those bonds and then bond with somebody again sexually. I mean, it's sort of a breaking down even of your ability to bond deeply. I think it's like you're making multiple different tracks with multiple different experiences and people to the point at which this is why what we see all the time in those who've developed a sexual addiction is it's a sort of emotionally numbing effect to where then even sexual experiences do not have the same level of thrill. It's almost like you've tapped out your chemical resources in your brain to the point that you've wasted them. And so I want to encourage people to think in terms of really not only thinking of protecting their morality, but hey, protect the chemicals in your brain. You know, think of them as valued resources that you only want to fire off in the right context and in the right way. And then you can form really, really deep bonds with your spouse that, solidify and reinforce your relationship.
The cultural implications are staggering. Every time we expose young people to sexual imagery, we're releasing the tidal power of these brain-based chemicals. Early exposure to pornography or sex on television may be opening sexual pathways in the brain way before other faculties like self-control can be engaged. And that's also true of dating younger and younger. We're just inviting these chemical avalanches to occur and create pathways that then, you know, make our children over-sexualized or sexualized prematurely. And boy, it just seems like in this culture, there's a mission to sexualize the adults, the teenagers, the children. Everybody is supposed to be open and free sexually, but what's not being recognized is we have these chemical, as the author says, avalanches. We have these oxytocin attachments. We have these chemical dumps happening in our head, and oftentimes it's too much for our children.
Well, folks, we're out of time, but parents, I really want to encourage you to think not only of the moral implications and what you're teaching your children about their sexuality, but also be thinking in terms of even the biological implications. Teach your children to protect those chemicals. Think of them as just as valuable as their morality, and you might see some great success in being able to train your child up in a way of biblical purity. We're glad you've been with us, and we'll see you back here again next week on the Pure Sex Radio broadcast.
You've been listening to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Learn more about our show at puresexradio.com. Thanks for tuning in to today's broadcast. We want to hear from you. This broadcast is not possible without the prayers and financial support of listeners like you. Our mailing address is coming up. Get your pens ready. You can also contact us by phone at 1-800-49-PURITY. That's 1-800-49-PURITY. Our mailing address for your notes and donations is Pure Sex Radio, 1800 Northeast Loop 410, Suite 401, San Antonio, Texas 78217. Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.